It's time for our weekly conversation with the Washtenaw County Sheriff Jerry Clayton and Emergency Management Director Dave Halteman on the Lucianne Lance Show, Ann Arbor's talk station, 1290 WLBY. Across the nation, a movement to reform police departments is taking hold in the wake of racial unrest. The city council in Minneapolis voted to disband its police department. The New York City Police Department faces a budget cut. And in Michigan, a bill to reform police training is making its way through the legislature. Washtenaw County Sheriff Jerry Clayton has acknowledged that change is needed. Sheriff, making changes to how cops are trained is one area to consider, but is defunding an entire police department taking it too far?
Good morning, Lucianne. So the first thing is, what do you mean by defunding? And for those individuals that take the abolitionist position to policing, and I know a number of those folks and been in meetings with them, my response is, well, okay, I get it. That's where you want to go. But until then, we have to find a way to work together. And these efforts around defunding concern me in this way. If we want to take a step back in terms of reform and talk about restructuring and reimagining police and reimagining the relationship with the community, I am 100% for that. I think we're more successful when we challenge status quo. But we need to do so thoughtfully, and we need to think about what outcomes are we looking for, how do we build strong and sustainable communities, how does the entity that is charged with helping maintain societal behavior and enforce the law, you can call it whatever you want. There will be some entity, some group of people anointed to do that. And what does that group look like? And what should they, you know, what role should they play? And how should we support it? I think all of those discussions are healthy discussions. But we need to do that in a very thoughtful way. And just this talking point of defunding police without defining what that means and being thoughtful and trying to figure out what the impact of, I think is dangerous.
Well, and let's be very clear, it's very radical. The idea revolves around taking money from law enforcement and moving it to support communities through other means. And I'm unsure what those other means are, Sheriff.
Yeah. So, again, this conversation is not new to me because, I've been in all these different meetings with different national groups, and they say just that. And then you start to say, well, okay, what does that really mean? What does that look like? So when you start shifting funds, so some people say, look, your budgetary decisions at a governmental level is reflective of your values, your morals, and your priorities. I agree with that. And when you start to say, well, I want to shift money from one department or office to another, okay, for what purpose? To what end? Have we analyzed the unintended consequences of that? And, oh, yeah, by the way, if you start shifting and allocating funds from the police to something else, let's make sure that we also realign our expectations of the services the police will provide, the level that they provide, all of those things. And if you're going to shift some of the responsibility away, that's fine, but you can't hold us to those same expectations. And I'll add one more piece. When you make those kinds of shifts, and you start to shift those responsibilities, what people are thinking about in terms of outcomes will not happen overnight. It's a transitional process that will take years, and my question to the larger public is, do we have the patience for that? Do we understand what all that means? So I'll say it one more time. I'm supportive of the conversation, but it needs to be a thoughtful, deliberate conversation, and any actions that are taken need to be reflective of a larger-term strategy for getting to the outcomes that we want.
Sheriff Clayton, the mayor of Minneapolis stated on Good Morning America today that part of the problem is union protection of its members, that after arbitration, the bad actor is back on the force. Would you like to see changes, reform in unions as well?
Listen, I think everything is on the table. I think there's always been a place for unions. There's always been a place for unions in terms of protecting employee rights. So again, if we're thinking about changing the nature of the relationship with unions, we need to think about what that means. And here's my belief. The power that people say that some unions have is in direct response to the weak leadership that has existed in government for quite some time. And I'll give you an example. There are limitations in the collective bargaining agreement and parameters around how you discipline, how you hold people accountable. And we have to work within that. In some places, it's worse than others. But if you trace it all the way back, it's usually because the elected officials, city council, mayor, whomever that is, cut a deal in negotiation that we don't want to pay you this much or give you this benefit. So guess what? We'll agree to this measure in terms of how employees are held accountable. So then you have a police chief or maybe even a sheriff that now wants to have some accountability members that have been handcuffed by the collective bargaining agreement that more than likely they did not negotiate. So for all the politicians that are standing up and saying we need to do all these things, let's trace back to they have significant accountability for where we are today.
Are you saying that perhaps during the budget negotiations that if more money was given to police departments for those salaries instead of these extra protections in the unions or how collective bargaining goes, that could change the conversation?
What I'm saying is that's part of why we're here. So in collective bargaining agreements, you're sitting down across the table, and if the union's asking for a 10% raise, and I can only say I can afford to give you 5, and I say, well, I'm going to give you 5 instead of 10, but I'm also going to acquiesce to your demand that discipline gets pulled out of an employee's record after 2 years. So wait a minute. We're going to agree to take discipline or corrective action out of an employee's record after 2 years. Now I have no history. So this goes back to now something happens 4 or 5 years down the line, and you come to find out that this employee had 10 incidents in the past. But guess what? After 2 years, they all got pulled out. So when it really came for what we call progressive discipline or progressive corrective action, you were sort of handcuffed because we started removing all of the prior errors and mistakes and violation of policy after 2 years. So all of that comes into play. And it's complicated, but when we try to simplify and just say a talking point, people don't understand the depth and complexity, nor do they understand the history sometimes of how we got here.
Let's talk about this bill that passed the state Senate here in Michigan last week. It was Jeff Irwin's bill, Senator Irwin, and it would require, beginning in 2022, all licensed police officers to undergo training in de-escalation, implicit bias, procedural justice, among other points in this, and it remains to be seen where it goes in the legislature here. The governor has said she does support it. What are your thoughts on this?
So it's funny. So I testified in front of the Judiciary Committee, I think it was Thursday, in support of the bill. And let me just say this. I think it's a good step. It has low-hanging fruit, Lucien. The fact that the legislature, listen, I love the profession, been a part of it for 35 years, but we got work to do. We really do. The fact that the legislature thinks they have to mandate what I believe to be basic training is a problem in and of itself. So we're not a perfect organization, the sheriff's office, but we were doing that training 4 years ago. It's just basic. So we shouldn't have to mandate some of the basics. Listen, there are different training disciplines that are important, but if I expect my staff to spend most of their time, which they do, interacting with people, building legitimacy in the community, understanding that as human beings we all bring some kind of implicit bias to the interactions, all of us, not just police officers, and to get training not to eliminate the bias, because most folks say you can't, but to understand what it is and the building strategy so it doesn't impact what I do, basics around de-escalation, basics around just understanding when someone's in a mental health crisis and not stigmatize it and respond to it. This is what our people do every day, all day. We shouldn't need the legislature to mandate that. We should be stepping up as a profession. We should mandate it. We should make sure it's happening. And when a legislator, and I applaud Jeff on taking, and Jeff did what started this, because we were having these conversations over a year ago, before George Floyd and other things, when a legislature stands up, senator stands up saying, I want to do that, our profession should say, you know what, we already got that. Under wraps, we're doing it, we're moving on to something else. So I support it. I think it should go, and I'll add this last piece. The state cannot just mandate without providing the financial support to make sure it's executed. So not just the financial support to pay for the training itself, But when we train groups of staff, we have to pull them off the road. We're 24/7, 365. Who pays for the overtime required to backfill those positions so they could get trained? And I'll end with this. I use this analogy. We're not like the car manufacturers that when they're about to roll out a new model, they can shut the plant down for 6 weeks, retool, and then start back up. We don't have that luxury. We have to deliver the services while we're training and improving our organization. That requires money and support. So now this goes back to my conversation around defunding. So you're going to have police. You want them to operate at the highest level, attracting the brightest and the best, giving them the best support, policy, training, organizational culture, and then you want to take money away as opposed to giving more money so they can accomplish that outcome. This is where you start to see the conversations are disconnected.
They are indeed. And Sheriff, was there anything in this bill that talks about the funding of it?
No, there were some amendments to it, but there was no, I don't believe, and I could be wrong because I didn't see the final version. I do not believe that there was any ultimate commitment to funding the bill. I will say this. I was asked the question that, Sheriff, if we gave you all the money you wanted, funded the training, everything, does that mean we won't have any incidents like we've seen in Minnesota or elsewhere? You know, my response is simple. No, you can't guarantee that. Any chief or sheriff that says they can guarantee that their staff's never going to do something that is outside of policy or that breaks the law is either not being truthful with you or they don't know what they're talking about. Look, we're trying to do the best we can, bring in the right people, give them the right support, create the right organizational climate, the right policy, the right training. And even with that, let's not forget, we hire human beings. Human beings make mistakes. Human beings error. Human beings sometimes intentionally go outside the line. We're trying to minimize the possibility of that, and when they do, minimize the impact of that. And we have to invest in our staff up front to put us in the best position to mitigate the risk.
Sheriff Clayton, I agree with you on that. I do want to challenge you, though. Is it possible that the kind of de-escalation training and the other procedural things that you have in place as training, not just at the Washtenaw County Sheriff's Department, but throughout the country in policing agencies, that perhaps it could be fine-tuned, that maybe today's world has changed so greatly with how savvy people are, the technology that citizens are using, how they're getting involved in these cases, and they come out to where there are incidents like we saw recently over at Apple Ridge, that perhaps things could be handled in a different way? Is that possible?
Oh, yeah. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not wed to the status quo. Well, so part of the training is you got to do the research and evolve. And listen, when I first went through the police academy, we were told to charge in, to address the situation, to lock it down, get people under control, and get out. So now we don't train like that. We train, get in, assess, create distance. Distance and time is your friend. You don't have to immediately go in there and control. That's all around de-escalation. So that's the evolution. My comments are not to mean that we don't evolve, that we don't challenge the status quo. All I'm saying is we have to continue to evolve and challenge the status quo and find ways to do things better. Because we have human beings, then the dynamic's always going to be to change. That's part of our risk mitigation strategy, not to just be wed to what we did 10 or 15 years ago or 5 years ago, to continue to try to change and evolve for the better.
Sheriff, when you see a police officer using a knee on a neck, is that a technique that is taught in the academy?
Not any academy, and I used to teach the police academy, no academy I've ever been a part of. No training that I've ever been a part of. Matter of fact, we talk about some of the things that you could do that is the most dangerous thing. I mean, there's a reason why. And so I'll give you another example. They're talking about this acknowledgement that I think in Minneapolis banned the chokehold. Well, again, I'm going to say this. That's low-hanging fruit. Most police organizations banned the chokehold years ago. In our policy, you're prohibited to do a neck restraint technique unless it is a lethal force encounter, which means the police officer believes that harm to themselves or someone else is imminent. In those situations, just like you could use your firearm to stop resistive behavior that is a lethal encounter, then you can use a neck restraint. But outside of that, it's banned everywhere, as far as, or most places, as far as I'm concerned.
Washtenaw County Sheriff Jerry Clayton on the Lucianne Lance Show, Ann Arbor's talk station, 1290 WLBY. Joining our conversation is Dave Halteman. He's the Emergency Management Director for Washtenaw County. As we pivot to COVID-19 and where we stand today in the county, I understand those numbers, Dave, have been going down. Let's talk a little bit about what some of the things are that you're doing and monitoring here in the county.
Good morning, Lucy. Yeah, we are definitely monitoring the numbers, especially as we move towards opening more services throughout the state and the county. Right now, you know, as of the end of last week, public health reported 1,348 confirmed cases, with 373 of those being hospitalizations in some form or another. That's a 28% rate of people needing some form of hospitalization from COVID. So we got to continue to monitor that. Again, I want to make sure that we're watching those larger events and other events where people are gathering without masks. Certainly our supply chains of personal protection equipment and our staffing levels have been stable, but it's one of those things where it's a moving target. We have to make sure that we're adjusting as we go forward. But in some ways, I'm glad to see that we are starting to open up certain functions within the state.
What happens, Dave, if, and perhaps the sheriff might want to answer this as well, but if there is a restaurant that hasn't done its due diligence and put out the tables and chairs 6 feet from each other and had arrows on the floor and done everything that we've seen a lot of our restaurants do here in Washtenaw County, is there something that the department then would get involved in that? Dave?
That is quite possible. I believe if there was somebody who was not complying and we had to approach them and make those requests and they further denied following the compliance rules, then sure, they may have to be removed from the facility or the service. But I think most people are pretty understanding of this. Most people are as concerned as anybody that they don't want to make this any worse. They want to make things better. And I think we can all work together to make it work that way.
Sheriff, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was just add on, you know, if it's a business, again, maybe there's a lack of education. We, like we always would do, work with public health, try to educate the business owner. And if they intentionally decide to go against the directives, then there's always possibility of writing a citation. That starts to get expensive. If it's a patron, again, try to engage and educate. And then we talk to the business owner about not serving them. And then if we have to trespass them outside, you know, out of the establishment, then we would do that. Again, trying to stay away from making an arrest, maybe even issue that person a citation. But we have to be really firm that for us to contain the spread, everybody's got to do their part. And we wouldn't hesitate to engage individuals that aren't doing their part.
Dave, it sounds like about mid-June is the time that everything is going to be reopened, including those much-desired salons. Is that your understanding, or are there other kinds of businesses that still will have to grapple with this?
I think there are a few other businesses that will still grapple, but we will be opening those, according to the governor, on June 15th. Those services, as well as things like bottle return, I know a lot of people are anxious about that. There's garages filling up with the bottle returns, but at the same time, those are factors that will affect the spread of the virus if we don't manage it properly. I do believe, you know, there are a lot of things in place now. Even the county has taken a lot of proactive action before opening, where they have put in plexiglass at certain facilities where the public would be able to interact with our staff, but still in a safe way. Certainly, as you mentioned, the signage, the markings on the ground to help direct people to further contribute to that social distancing. All that is in place. It's just really a matter of human nature of being able to comply with that and get through this.
And the people who have health issues aside, who have been told that if you can't wear a mask, we understand that you don't have to. But for those that can and aren't, what do you say to them, Dave, when they go into these businesses that have put all of these precautions in place and yet they still are having customers come in not wearing masks? And I'm not talking about those that can't wear them, but those that could.
No, it's really difficult, Lucy. I agree. I was at Meijer's just yesterday, and, you know, for the most part, everybody was wearing masks. There was probably a handful, maybe six to a dozen people that were not. I think the conception out there is that, you know, the mask is not going to protect them, but really what the mask is helping to do is prevent it from spreading and preventing others from getting it from you in case you are a carrier of the virus. So again, I think it's difficult for some to adapt to something that's changed or different, but in the best interest of us as a community and as a whole, I think just got to continue to try and convince those people.
Well, we grew up in an era where no shoes, no shirt, no service, so no mask has been added to that as well. It's no different. Dave, great talking with you, Sheriff, as well. We appreciate these conversations each week on our show. Sheriff Jerry Clayton and Dave Halteman, Emergency Management Director for Washtenaw County. I'm Lucy Ann Lance, and this is Ann Arbor's Talk Station, 1290 WLBY.